Imagine like the most brutal, desperate place on earth. You picture thick, suffocating mud, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You picture this impassable, rotting jungle and human beings just locked in a terrifying fight for sheer survival. I mean, when we think of a humanitarian crisis like the massive migration through the Darien Gap, we've kind of been conditioned to expect a very specific type of imagery.
Right, we expect that gritty, hyper-focused photojournalism.
Exactly. We anticipate this raw, unfiltered documentation of human suffering that's, designed specifically to shock the system. But imagine trying to capture that exact terrifying reality using the most delicate, fragile, luxurious art supplies money can buy.
Which creates this immediate friction,
Yeah.
because we are so entirely accustomed to that tight crop on a face in distress in our news feeds. You know, the undeniable proof of an event, complete with the dirt, the tears, the immediate reality of it all. So when a crisis is translated through a highly aesthetic, almost translucent medium,
It changes things completely.
it forces us out of that passive scrolling mode. We can no longer just consume the trauma and move on. The image actually demands a different kind of visual and mental labor.
And that friction is exactly what we are unpacking today in this deep dive. We are exploring a piece of art from August 2024 titled Seis Inmigrantes, or Six Immigrants, by the artist Jairo Duque.
It's a really fascinating
It
piece.
totally is. And our mission today is to analyze this painting as a critical case study. Like, if you are a university student studying visual arts, sociology, or political science, this piece completely reframes how contemporary art processes global migration. So, okay, let's unpack
Let's
this.
do it.
Because Duke didn't just, conjure this scene from his imagination. He took a crude, raw digital photograph circulating on the web like a harsh snapshot of the Darien Gap migration, and he completely transformed it.
Right, and what the artist chooses to hide in that transformation is honestly just as vital as what he actually puts on the paper.
Yeah, the omission is key.
Exactly. The painting takes the stark photographic clarity of that digital source and replaces it with this ghostly abstraction. The figures lose their sharp edges, the jungle loses its literal leaves and vines, we're just left with silhouettes.
Which is wild, but before we can even begin to debate, the politics or the sociology of that abstraction, we have to look at the physical mechanics of this artwork.
The literal materials.
Right, we have to understand how it was made because the material reality of this painting is completely wild when you compare it to the geographic reality of the Darien Gap. The sources highlight the specific materials used, and there is a very deliberate alchemy happening
Oh,
here.
the materials are foundational to the piece's meaning. According to the artist's specifications, this artwork is painted on 640-gram cold-pressed Arches paper using really high-end Daniel Smith pigments.
Okay, stop right there. 640 gram paper. For anyone not entrenched in the material science of watercolor, why does that matter?
Well, the weight of the paper changes everything. Standard watercolor paper is relatively thin, and it buckles when it gets wet. But 640-gram paper is incredibly dense.
Yeah.
I mean, it is essentially as thick and rigid as cardboard.
Wow, like literal cardboard.
Yeah, and because it's cold-pressed, it has a heavy, rough, deeply textured grain that is just full of microscopic peaks and valleys.
So when heavily watered pigment hits that thick cardboard-like texture, what actually happens? Because I'm looking at the images of the painting in our sources, and the paint doesn't look smooth or controlled. It looks messy, almost chaotic in certain areas.
Right, so that is a process called granulation, and it's actually a key mechanism of the artwork. Watercolors aren't just colored water, you know. They are made of physical, crushed pigment particles that are suspended in a binder.
Okay.
So when you drop heavily watered pigment onto that rough 640-gram paper, the heavy particles, physically separate from the water, they settle into the deep valleys of the paper's texture, and they just pool there.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, and as the water evaporates, it creates these unpredictable, muddy, granular spots of color. The paint just straight up refuses to lay perfectly flat.
Which means the artist is weaponizing the paint itself to mimic the jungle.
Exactly.
That is so cool. Rather than painstakingly sketching every single leaf or vine or puddle with a tiny brush, the pooling watercolors physically recreate the environment right there on the page. Just looking at how the paint stagnates in those valleys, you get the sense of the constant humidity.
You really do.
You can practically feel the thick mud and the impenetrable rotting greens of the jungle. I mean, even the river in this painting isn't rendered as some idyllic, sparkling blue stream. It is painted in these opaque yellow greens.
Yeah, it feels like an ambiguous, terrifying obstacle.
Totally.
The medium itself becomes the jungle. essentially. By allowing the pigment to disperse and pool and stagnate on that heavy cotton paper, the technique communicates the physical terror of that terrain. It's this visceral translation of dampness and rot.
But here's where it gets really interesting, though. There is a massive jarring contradiction at the heart of this.
Oh, for sure. The location?
Yes. This incredibly visceral depiction of jungle terror, you know, the mud, the rot, the brutal struggle for survival, it was painted drop by drop in Jairo Duke's studio.
Right.
And that studio is a comfortable, safe, highly controlled environment located in Whittier, California. So isn't there an inherent danger here?
What do you mean?
Well, using luxury watercolors, which are inherently beautiful and fluid to depict a death trap, it feels like trying to explain the terrifying feeling of suffocation using the strict, elegant rules of classical poetry. Doesn't this romantically soften a reality that is actually destroying lives?
That is the big question. Mm-hmm. But the geographical and material distance you're pointing out is actually the primary source of the work's power, not a flaw in its design.
Wait, really? How so?
Well, using a transparent, inherently beautiful medium to depict absolute horror creates an uncomfortable friction that we just cannot ignore.
Yeah.
The form constantly threatens to betray the harshness of the content. You are capturing the brutal reality of the Darien Gap, but you were doing it with luxury pigments in California, which naturally create these subtle, elegant blends. It forces the viewer to confront whether the aesthetics are overriding the reality of the crisis.
Wait, but isn't that kind of the point of art? I mean, if we just wanted unvarnished reality, we would stick to the raw digital photograph.
Sure.
By removing the hyper-realistic gore and using these beautiful pigments, the artist strips away our ability to just scroll past it, right?
You are touching on a massive debate within the sociology of art right there. Does refining tragedy into beauty force us to look closer? Or does it give us permission to admire the tragedy rather than intervene?
Oof, that's heavy.
It is. And to understand it, we have to look at how the visual composition operates on the viewer. Look at how the space is constructed on that heavy paper.
Yeah, the composition definitely places you in a very specific role. You have these faceless, anonymous silhouettes struggling against the opaque water, and they are framed by these large, heavy rocks in the foreground. Because of those rocks, the perspective intentionally places you in a slightly elevated position.
Right, and by elevating the viewer's eye line above those rocks, the painting positions you as a silent, distant witness.
Like you're just watching from the sidelines.
Exactly. You are kept on the outside looking in. You are fundamentally incapable of intervening in the scene. You can only watch.
Which ties directly into a crucial concept from the sources regarding how we view these subjects.
Yeah.
Duke actually connects this specific work to a Latin American term, trastio.
Trastio, yes. That's such a vital element of this piece.
Oh, right. Now, for those who might not know, usually, trastio just refers to moving house.
Yeah, it's super mundane.
Exactly. It is the everyday shifting of your furniture, your pots and pans from one apartment to another. It's a familiar domestic chore. But here, the artist elevates trastio to this brutal existential plane.
It becomes about survival.
Yeah. We are looking at families carrying their entire lives, literally carrying their quote-unquote houses in backpacks across a river that absolutely does not care about official passports or international borders.
And the abstraction of the figures actually highlights the physical toll that trastio.
How so?
Well, they lack distinct facial features, right? But the physical mechanics of the human body are incredibly precise.
Oh, true.
You can see the exact angle of a straining spine, the locked knees, the body's leaning heavily against the current. The abstraction doesn't hide the sheer, crushing weight of those packs. It actually strips away distractions, so the weight is all you see.
You know, I see that as a really strong argument for the abstraction. By removing the visible tears, the mud on the faces, all those hyper-realistic elements we have grown completely numb to from endless social media scrolling.
Right, because we see it every day.
Exactly. The artist strips away the cheap melodrama. The quiet fragility of the watercolor perfectly matches the physical fragility of the migrants. It forces you, the listener, to do the internal work of empathy rather than having the pain just spoon-fed to you. You have to fill in the blanks.
That perspective is totally valid, but it raises a really urgent sociological question, especially for, you know, the university students analyzing the ethics of representation today.
Okay, let's hear it.
If you reduce these struggling, desperate people to aesthetic ghosts, silhouettes beautifully blending into a pretty green landscape, are you actually universalizing your pain? Or are you simply stripping them of their humanity and their specific individual identities?
Oh, wow. So the risk is making them invisible through the art itself.
Precisely. The sources note that this spectral reading, where the figures almost disappear into the green of the jungle, it's intended by the artist as a metaphor for their political invisibility.
Right, they're ignored by governments, so they are painted as ghosts.
Exactly. However, the sociological critique is that the artwork might actually be replicating the exact political invisibility that caused the crisis in the first place.
That's a really intense critique.
It is. By turning them into ghosts, you take an urgent political and economic disaster and you convert it into a purely aesthetic experience.
Man. And looking at the sources mapping out this crisis, I mean, it's clear this migration doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Not at all.
The data points to closed borders, economic collapse, and structural violence driving these people into the jungle. It is a massive systemic failure. So the challenge to you listening is this. If a painting puts you in a safe, elevated position behind the rocks and essentially says, contemplate this beautiful tragedy, does it train you to passively accept the suffering?
That's the core of the debate.
Right. Does it make you view the crisis as an unchangeable piece of art on a wall rather than a geopolitical emergency demanding urgent political change?
And that is the inherent danger of the silent witness composition. When you stand back and look at it as a beautifully rendered tragedy, you might feel a profound pang of sadness.
Sure.
But you are not necessarily mobilized to dismantle the systemic failures driving these people into the Darien Gap. You simply observe them fading away into the pigment.
But you know, that feeling of being a silent witness doesn't just come from the paint on the paper.
Oh, no.
No. It is entirely reinforced by the physical rooms where this painting is destined to hang. If we are questioning whether the artwork demands action or passive contemplation, we have to look at the socioeconomic machinery of the art world itself.
Oh, right. We need to map out the full life cycle of this image.
Yes.
Because it is a fascinating ecosystem of observation and distance. The narrative begins as a raw, visceral human crisis in the mud of Central America.
Tragic and real.
Yeah. Then a photojournalist captures it, and it becomes a digital photograph floating on the web. It then gets downloaded and filtered through high-end Daniel Smith pigments in his safe, quiet California studio.
Which is already quite the journey.
And finally, its destination. The sources note this piece is slated for exhibition at Art Box in Casa del Arte in Palma, Spain in December 2024.
Think about the mechanics of that transition. How does a muddy, desperate reality become a pristine gallery object?
It's jarring.
It really is. Imagine you are an art or sociology student in Madrid or Palma, Spain. You are standing in a clean, well-lit, climate-controlled gallery in December, holding a glass of wine, viewing this piece. Does watching these silhouettes beautifully dissolved into the paint serve as a raw tool for global awareness?
Or does the machinery of the art world just sanitize the trauma?
Exactly. Turning Latin American suffering into a bourgeois object of contemplation for European galleries.
To fully grasp the weight of that gallery viewing, we actually have to talk about the historical baggage of watercolor itself.
Wait, watercolor has historical baggage.
Oh, absolutely. Watercolor on cotton paper isn't just a neutral, innocent medium. Historically, it is the exact medium of European botanical illustration. It's the tool of colonial explorer logs charting quote-unquote new territories and of romantic landscapes.
Wait, why watercolor specifically for explorers? Why not just paint or sketch?
Because of the logistics of colonial expansion.
Yeah.
Think about it. If you are an explorer on a ship in the 18th century, oil paint is an absolute nightmare.
Oh, right.
It requires heavy oils, toxic solvents, and it takes months to dry in damp conditions. But watercolor is highly portable. It dries almost instantly, and all you need is a single canteen of water.
Wow. I never thought about that.
Because of this, watercolor became the historical tool of mapping, conquering, and cataloging the New World by the rest. It is literally the medium of distant observation.
Okay, that adds a massive, almost unsettling layer to this deep dive.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah. We are looking at the victims of post-colonial fallout people driven from their homes by economic instability, and they are being painted using the exact historical tool of colonial cataloging.
Which is why, when an artist uses this specific historical colonial medium to document the brutal trastio of the Darien Gap,
mm-hmm.
we have to critically analyze the tension.
Right.
Is this a brilliant, conscious subversion by the artist? Is he taking the master's tools and using them to force the West to look at the crisis they helped create?
Or is it an unintentional domestication of the subject matter, making a horrific reality palatable, pretty, and easily consumable for a European gallery wall?
Exactly.
That is heavy. It makes you question every single brushstroke.
Literally.
But, you know, there's one final crucial detail from the artist's text that we have to bring into this debate to balance it out.
And what's that?
It's the word hope.
Ah, yes.
Because despite the exhaustion, despite the staggering weight of those backpacks, the oppressive humidity, and the absolute threat of the river, these figures are not alone. They are moving together.
And that shared transit is key to the artist's intent. They are advancing as a group.
Mm-hmm.
There is a collective resistance in their locked knees and straining spines. The painting isn't just a dead end of despair or a catalog of victims.
All right.
The sources point out it is a testament to the relentless human spirit seeking survival. It highlights their agency.
So what does this all mean for us as viewers? We've debated the California studio, the gallery in Spain, the colonial history of the paint. But asking a small watercolor painting to solve a geopolitical border crisis is like, it's like asking a magnifying glass to put out a forest fire.
I like that analogy.
Right. Its job isn't to extinguish the flames. Its job is to focus your attention sharply and uncomfortably on a single burning point.
That perfectly captures the function of the piece. To synthesize everything we've covered today, Seis Immigrants forces a necessary collision. You might view this piece as a masterpiece of profound existential synthesis, brilliantly capturing the weight of the human spirit. Or, you know, you might view it as a highly problematic aestheticization of trauma that strips migrants of their specific political reality.
Both are valid readings.
Yeah, and regardless of where you land, the painting undeniably succeeds in forcing us to confront the friction between ethics and aesthetics. It demands the exact rigorous scrutiny we've applied today. It refuses to let you just look, feel a fleeting moment of pity, and walk away with an easy answer.
And that is the ultimate call to action for you, the listener.
Absolutely.
Especially for the university students tuning in who might literally be writing a paper or defending a thesis on this exact topic tomorrow. There are no easy winners in this debate.
None.
We challenge you to take these arguments and push them further. Take the physical materiality of that thick 640-gram cardboard-like paper and the granulating pigment. Take the tension of the comfortable California studio versus the brutal reality of the jungle.
And take the sociological journey of the image ending up in a pristine gallery in Spain.
Exactly. Use all of this to draw your own conclusions about the limits of representation in art.
Yeah.
How should we document human suffering when the world is completely numb to photographs?
It's a question every generation of artists, sociologists, and global citizens has to answer for themselves. The art cannot provide the political solution. It only provides the space to ask the question.
So to wrap up our deep dive, I want to leave you with one final haunting image to mull over on your own.
Yeah.
Think back to where we started. When that objective, hyper-focused lens of the photojournalist's camera is turned off, and the painter takes over in the quiet safety of his studio, the reality of the Darien Gap mutates on that cotton paper.
It changes completely.
It does. As you look at those faceless silhouettes dissolving into the impenetrable, pooling green watercolor, you have to ask yourself, are we watching resilient human beings forging a path forward toward hope? Or are we simply watching from our safe, comfortable distance as the indifference of the world absorbs them forever?